Blog Talk Radio.
Oh my God!
Check out the pump, brother!
Wanna knock?
What's up, dude? I was born, I was bred, I was southern fed. Got a crazy idea running through my head. California is the place that I had to be. Then a speech in the pit really set me free. Oh yeah. It on. Everybody on the beach knew it wouldn't be long. I took the belt, it was clear, I don't really care. In the hands of the maniacs, we can all share.
Hey, check out the Python, baby. We're looking at that.
What's middle name? The kind is high as the sky, he remains the same. With the training and the prayers and the vitamins too. Don't mess with us, or we'll beat you too.
Are you a Hollywood producer? Hey, check out the Python, baby. Oh my God. Hey, check
out the Python, baby. You're 10-31 arm wrestle.
That is so awesome.
What's up, dog?
Hey, everybody, and welcome to Pro Wrestling Flashback. I am Sinbad, and of course I am joined by the one and only Cotrere. Cotrere, what do you think about Hulk Hogan's rapping skills?
I don't think much of
them.
You know, I wonder sometimes when these guys, you know, there's been some horrible songs, and I just wonder, how can anybody think this sounds good? You know, like Macho Man rapping? Hogan rapping, stuff like that.
My whole theory on all of that is, I bet like there's so many yes men just telling them like, oh yeah, that's right, Hulk. That's good. Like Jimmy Hart, you know? Can you picture him like good job, Hulkster? You know, just like telling them over and over and over. You know, it's good shit because you know Jimmy Hart just wants to get paid just like everybody else. So I don't know.
Only good wrestling singer was Michael Hayes. He was my favorite. I love Bad for USA.
Michael Hayes. I think Michael Hayes could have been a rock star. He's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, he got a pretty good voice, and we've heard some. But he did, like, what was the song? Sitting by the Dock of the Bay. He did a really good version of that on one of his albums.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I really
didn't
know.
He was doing a concert, like, at World Class or something, and he was on stage, and he sang that, and it was pretty good.
Oh, wow, that sounds interesting. So the reason I have Cotrere in the controlling the switchboard just in case it goes out for me. Quick story. For some reason this week, for two nights in a row, my power has gone out at about between 10:30 and 11:30, 2 days in a row for like 7 hours at a time. And I called the power company, you know. Yeah, it's the worst because it's like – you know, it's hot as hell. Like today was like 90 degrees. And, you know, no one wants their air conditioning off and they're trying to sleep, you know. It was horrible, horrible. So I'm just hoping, like, it doesn't go out again, you know.
Well, you should, I guess if it goes out again, just get drunk and pass out.
Yeah.
That's the best plan I can come up with. Not much else to do, you know, when it's at night like that. And 7 hours, that's too long to fucking wait. Gosh.
It was funny because, like, last night, you know, well, my girlfriend wasn't here two nights ago when it happened, but last night she was here, and she's just, like, we're just, like, sitting there, like, just, you know, it's completely pitch dark, you know, some business has already occurred. There's nothing else to do after that. You know, if you can't watch TV or something, you have to just go to sleep, and I wasn't tired yet, so.
Yeah. You know, can't have sex because that'll just make you hotter.
No, actually, what I started doing was singing old 90s rap songs like TLC and stuff that are, you know, R&B rap, whatever. And it ended up being a whole
neighborhood. Is it the whole neighborhood that
Our whole street. Our whole street. Two days in a row, I don't know if they're doing, like, some sort of construction, and they don't think it's a big deal to turn people's electricity out. Not everybody goes to bed at fucking 9 o'clock, you know?
Yeah.
What an odd rant to open the show with, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, wouldn't you be pissed?
Yeah, I'd be pissed. I sat here, like, it was maybe a few weeks ago, and the power went out at, like, 9 o'clock, and it wasn't as long a wait as you, but, I mean, it's like there's no weather. I mean, it's not, like, weather-related. You don't know what's going on, and I just went and sat outside for a little while and, I don't know, drank a couple of beers and smoked some cigarettes, and I didn't have nothing else to do, and then I just kind of laid down on the couch and
There's really nothing else to do.
Yeah.
First thing I'm going to do is plug the website that we are featured on, which is superfriendsuniverse.com. So everybody go there and check us out and check all the other great shows out on that website. And we will get into this whole Hogan is in WCW now. He came in, he won the world title immediately. On that pay-per-view, they actually had all the heels win all their matches except for Hogan, because Hogan likes to come in strong. And
yeah.
He's just, I mean, everybody needs to know that, you know, this man has such a huge ego, and, like, everybody either loves or hates him for it, for that huge ego. You know, just, you know, because Hogan lies to the best, you know, to some people, and they're the worst to other people. So, I don't know, we will get into that. So, so Hogan wins the world title. And they are immediately going to build up for a Clash of the Champions right after that, I believe, where there's going to be the rematch. And because they don't really have anything until, what was it? It was the end of August. The 24th of August is like their next big show, which is a Clash. And there's a storyline of this that we're going to go ahead and, you know, start talking about. There's kind of a backstory to it, too. Before Hogan came in, Arn Anderson and Ric Flair, like, cooked up this little masked man storyline to do with Sting. And it was supposed to, you know, play out for the rest of the year because they didn't necessarily know Hogan was coming in. So this is all from Rick, this is from Flair's book. And so they're like, you know, why waste a good idea? So it was Arn dressed up in a mask, and as this Clash of the Champions, he attacks Hulk Hogan. So there's a new storyline of there's a masked man attacking Hulk Hogan. And if you could go into, like, you know, further detail, like, you know, what's really going on with all this?
This, I think the idea came about because wasn't this like fresh off from like the Winter Olympics when Nancy Kerrigan got her knee taken out? And, you know, by the guy with the baton that ran up behind her and clubbed her in the knee.
This is where the whole idea came from.
And Hogan's even laying there saying, why me, why me?
Like
the Olympics, it was so bad.
Yeah. Hogan is not a great Nancy Kerrigan.
No, so, and they have him pop up, like, later after the Clash of the Champions just to kind of keep this little storyline going. And we'll probably eventually get to that. But, that's the storyline. They take Hogan's knee out, and he has to go to the hospital.
All right, but before we go into it, we actually have a call to lead off the show. Might as well go ahead and start with the call. All right. It's clearly a Skype call. What is going on, Skype member?
Yo.
Oh, it's the Sniper Man.
What's
going on, man?
What's up, children? How are you?
Pretty good, man. How are you?
Where'd he go?
I have no idea. Yeah, he left, apparently. Well,
I thought he was a fan, man.
Yeah. Yo! So, let's start talking about those class matches. And, like, I think it works better if we work backwards and explain how the matches happened. Because we did that last week, and it really seemed to work out.
Yeah.
All right. The Nasty Boys defeated Paul Orndorff and Paul Roma in a non-title match to kind of you know, build up the Nasty Boys. You know, they're about to get a run with the belts, I believe so at least. And it's so odd how they, like, WCW was never really, you know, quick to move the belts around for anybody, you know, but they would with the tag titles. The tag titles changed, like, you know, four or five times that year, which back then that's like, you know, the equivalent of, like, you know, the Nitro era of, you know, how all the title changes, you know, would happen all the time, seemingly every week. All right, Sniper, are you back?
Apologize, Sniper. Whatever happened. Y'all cut me off. Hey.
Hello? We definitely didn't cut you off, man.
Okay, hey, well, here's the deal. Hey, what's up, gentlemen? Hey, it's me. What the fuck? Hey,
what's
anyway,
up,
hey, I don't know if y'all have been under a rock or whatever, but I've got a Twitter, and I have some things to say. However, I just wanted to say I was enjoying listening to the program before you guys hung up on me, and I would say I will call back later. I actually have some things to say. But what I'm going to do is I'm cooking right now, and I want to listen to your program on hold if I can, and then you come back, and I will say what I have to say, okay?
All right, we'll come get you in like a half hour or so.
Okay, hey, just leave me on hold, though, because I want to hear what the fuck is going on.
And then
what I want you to do is when you say, all right, we're ready for Sniper, and I will come back, all right?
All right, that works for us.
All right, hey, and Mr. Cotrera, hey, I know we have had our various beasts on the board, and even though I do kind of think that you're up Brian Alvarez's ass a little bit, when you fire back on me, I can tell it's with real hatred, and I have respect for that because I am not a faggot, and I'm not afraid to go toe-to-toe with a real man. You know what I'm saying? So I have respect for you in that sense, and I do have respect for you in the sense that you are not as much of a faggot as Thrill Billy. Okay, now y'all can holler back at me whenever you want.
All right.
I'm just going to listen. Okay.
All right. He's on hold. Yes, and first off, I like the Sniper, but JR is definitely not a faggot. He's awesome. All right, so let's go ahead and
I just knew something was happening when I saw in our thread, Audio Terrorism Returns Tonight.
Yeah, well, we knew it was coming. All right, so we had a little bit of audio terrorism, and we will have it, I guess, a little bit later. I'll talk to them again in like a half hour. All right, so, they're changing the titles a lot. What do you think about that?
Yeah, especially if when you get later in the year, you know, when you have Marcus Bagwell tag team champion, you know it's going to change a lot more.
Yeah.
Because he could never hold on to the title much, so.
They never really did much with Marcus Bagwell. And it's odd to think that they held on to the guy for 10 years. He was like the Billy Gunn of WCW, you know?
And they had that one good chance to get him over, you know, with the neck injury and make a huge babyface out of him, but they fucked it up.
It's a horrible, horrible, horrible company it became. But as of right now it's really good. And we have Ricky Steamboat. And he wrestled Stunning Steve Austin, and he won the U.S. title. And there was like
great
a
match.
Yeah, it was a really good match, and they always seem to work really good together.
Yeah,
so,
they were guys just like, you know, Steamboat and Flair had just had great chemistry. And you know, I give Steamboat a lot of credit for, you know, like helping Austin develop, you know, in the ring and stuff like that.
One thing that we need to talk about also is in the first match, you see in the audience the Blacktop Bully who had just jumped from – see, like, this is insane because WCW – would always just sign any WWF guy, any old WWF guy that wanted to come in, especially if they were, you know, one of Hogan's boys, they would come in right away. And another one of them was from Demolition,
I believe it was Smash, Barry Darso, who was the Repo Man, who was a jobber his entire time in the WWF. He was a jobber.
What?
So he comes.
Well, not when he was Smash.
Yeah, I'm talking about it's a singles.
Oh yeah, it's a singles.
He has a singles. He was a glorified jobber. I mean, he would beat jobbers, but anytime he would wrestle anybody that mattered, he would lose and lose quickly. So he is going to be debuting as a mid-carder as the Blacktop Bull. They show him, debuting, and then also Hogan was attacked. Like the show starts with Hogan out for an interview, and he got attacked by the masked guy with the pipe. So they're like cutting in and out of like. It's almost like that November 1991 clash where Sting's injured, and I think it was actually Bischoff.
Kind of the exact same thing.
It was almost the same thing.
Well, remember, it would have been the same thing because Flair was supposed to win the title.
That is
you
exactly.
know, on this clash, that it was the original plan, but Hogan, had to slip that creative thing in there. Don't want to build up more heat by having Flair get the belt back and stuff like that,
Yeah, he said that he was doing too well with merchandise. He didn't want to hurt that. So,
I hate when people say that. Like, you're the champion. And, you're the champion. You're also Hulk Hogan. You're going to sell merchandise anyway. It don't matter if you're the champion or not.
No, he would sell merchandise. He would have. But it wouldn't have mattered if he had the title or not. John Cena, I went to Raw last night. And John Cena, you saw 1,000 John Cena shirts. I mean, literally 1,000. If you looked, and John Cena's nowhere near that title right now. He hasn't had it for months. It does not matter because he has a new purple and yellow shirt, and horrible gaudy colors, and everybody buys it. I bought that shirt. I have it. I'm looking at it right now. I have that shirt, and people are gonna buy it anyways. Because people love John Cena, and it's just. So stupid that like that mindset of because Hogan is old school. I mean, he's been around for a long, long, long period of time, and he's all business. So poor Ric Flair really got fucked.
Yeah, this
was
the start of the Flair curse in WCW. They just kind of like beat him into the ground.
Yes, and they started a storyline a couple months back with the Assassin. And it's in my opinion, the worst storyline of the year. Dusty was put back on the booking committee, and he'd been there for quite a while. But after that Slamboree show, the Assassin, he never left. And he just randomly show up with his, his mask that barely fucking fits his face. And he'd come out on Saturday night and saying, I'm trying to call Dusty. I've tried to meet him here. He's nowhere to be found. And this 60-year-old man is challenging this 50-year-old man, over and over. And and they're trying to build up something.
Wasn't that after Slamboree in '93? I think is when it was.
So what?
When the Assassin was coming back, calling out Dusty. I think that was after Slamboree '93.
Oh, my gosh, you're right.
Because you remember that Flair was doing the Flair for the Gold segments back then, and he had Dusty on and the doorbell rang and the Assassin was there?
Wow, I completely, I jumped back an entire year. All right, now I know where I'm at, okay? All right. The storyline for this is, which I will also go into great detail. That was very detailed, though, and I do remember it distinctly. Dustin Rhodes was turned on by Arn Anderson, who joined the Colonel Parker's what were they called? The
Stud Stable.
Yeah, the Stud Stable. And so since he got attacked, all of a sudden Dusty Rhodes, of course, still the booker, takes it upon himself to join the feud, so it's at the Clash. It's Dusty and Dustin against Terry Funk and Bunkhouse Buck And
do you remember? Do you remember? There was a promo Dusty cut. You know, when he, I think he saved him from an attack, like on one of the earlier TV shows, and he did this promo, and it kind of acted like they were estranged from each other. Because
yes.
He said, it was kind of weird, but I think what he was saying was, you know, he wasn't there when he was a kid, and now he wants to. Now he wants,
To be a good father.
Yeah, now he wants to be a good father, and let's give me a hug and a kiss to seal the deal, and that's where that came from. So.
Yes, and then they hugged, and he gave him a hug and a kiss, which,
yeah.
To be honest, I remember that so distinctly that, like, it's like it like almost put a tear in my eye, because it was a beautiful
good promo.
Yeah,
it was.
It
was a hell of a promo.
Yeah, Dusty was so great at getting things over. And it's so crazy how, like, this storyline was one of the things that really got me interested at the time. Like, in, you know, WCW had a lot of ups and downs, especially when Hogan came in. But those first couple of months and lots of months after that were really bad. And this was one of those things that, like, kept me around, you know, because Dustin Rhodes, still to this day, is really good. He's still a really good wrestler. And back then, like, when he was just a young kid, like, anybody that watched him knew that he had it, like, that he was a really skilled wrestler. So, I don't know. I really like this whole feud. It was great.
Yeah, you had Terry Funk, who, you know, I love Terry Funk, and Bunkhouse Buck,
yeah.
And Arn Anderson. I mean, that's a hell of a group.
I just think it's really funny that you let me talk about this assassin storyline for fucking like 5 minutes, and you're just like, I think that was 93.
Well, no, I thought I had missed something.
No.
When you started talking about it, I thought
it was definitely 93.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. It was. I think what happened was, I recently watched that, kind of recently.
Oh.
Well, I mean, back when we were talking about 93. And I don't know why, it just came to my head when I saw Dusty Rhodes, and, like, I don't know why I just thought that. But, you know, moving on.
There was a great finish in this match with Dusty breaks a wooden chair over Ming's head, and Ming's still wearing the chair and getting the tongue and death grip. That was awesome.
But remember who tried making the save? Frankie Lancaster, you know, Jobber of the Stars, who'd been the jobber forever, you know, tried making the save, and I always thought it was funny because it really made these people know that they were jobbers when, you know, Doug Dillinger, like, was like the law and order of WCW. He was the head of security. We all knew it. But, I mean, he's just this old fat guy, you know what I mean? Not necessarily fat, but, like, you know, a
yeah.
beer gut. And, like, you know, when he would come, like, you know, everybody would back off with Doug Dillinger, you know? Like, it didn't matter if, you know, Sid was coming at you with a knife, you know, that no one even cares about that. But if Doug Dillinger and his, like, you know, salt and pepper beard and beer gut comes after you, you'd all of a sudden take off. I always thought that was hilarious. You know, I always thought that they should have had a more intimidating-looking head of security.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't mind him really having the job. I mean, but, like, for storyline purposes, I think that they probably should have had. But if WCW would have had someone that looked like that, they, of course, would have, you know, pushed them to the
Remember
moves,
when WWF had that big jacked-up guy as a head of security?
I swear to God, I was just going to say that. Oh, man, it got out of my head. Yeah, like, that guy was awesome. He was wearing that, like, backwards leather hat, and he looked like he could fucking tear you in half. Like, he would
yeah.
tear your whole body in half. He was giant. I liked that guy. What happened to him?
I don't know.
Oh, yeah, I really have no idea either. And at that, I believe it was Bash at the Beach, they showed Antonio Inoki. And Antonio Inoki was, they brought him in to show that this Hogan thing was a huge deal.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be the biggest thing that ever happened at WCW, and it might have been. But they were also, he was going on his retirement tour, and they would, like, count down how many matches he had left. And one of the matches was against Lord Steven Regal, who was a TV champion, and he was really on a roll. I mean, he was, like, you know, he was beating everybody, and he was saving his title, but, I mean, he would beat people when it mattered would always be the blow-off match. And he was awesome, you know? And they put Regal in there with Inoki because Inoki sucked. And people won't admit it, but he was the shit. Just a horrible wrestler. And they put Regal in there to make him look good. And the match sucked. It wasn't very good at all. Do you have anything to add about that?
No, I never saw much of Antonio Inoki, but the times I did, well, did not see the big deal.
He was horrible.
Yeah.
Horrible. And then, because this is a Clash of the Champions, so like the Sting gimmick in November 91, Hogan finally comes back. And Nick Bockwinkel, you know, tells him, like, hey, you know, you shouldn't do this. And Nick Bockwinkel's on commentary, and he says, like, I have advised Hulk Hogan not to wrestle this match, but Hogan does it anyways. So Hogan is injured, and Ric Flair is scheduled to win the match, but Hogan changed it, and they did 14 minutes of absolutely horrible match. This was I think this was their worst match, and I'm including like their stuff like in 1999. It was just not very good at all because Hogan trying to sell like an injury is hilariously bad. I mean, that's the only way you can describe it. It was so bad, and Flair didn't even get the title back, like, you know, which would have made sense. And so Hogan,
he was claiming to be champion after this match. After he won by count out, he even went head his own belt, mate.
Yes, and the reason they did that was because he was really supposed to have the title, and they were trying to think of any reason to have a rematch.
He had gotten, you know, at the end of the match, he got counted out, and the masked man returned, and he and Flair went after Hogan's knee, and another case of a masked man. When he's doing stuff in the ring, I knew exactly it was Arn Anderson. I knew who it was. No doubt in my mind it was Arn Anderson. And,
Arn Anderson has a very distinct walk and a very distinct way of working that still to this day no one knows how to do. So you can always tell that it's him.
Yeah, distinct way to put the boots to you, where you just know.
Yes. Oh, it was a thing of beauty, what it was.
Yeah, Hogan, Flair, it's funny because they got, like, suspended indefinitely for attacking match of the match, which was kind of silly.
It was, yes.
I mean, you get indefinitely suspended for attacking Hulk Hogan after the match. Nobody else gets indefinitely suspended. They attack somebody else after the match, but, you know.
It's just one of those stupid, stupid things.
Yeah.
And they went on, like, a really extended tour of of Europe, I believe. I know that they went to, it was just Germany, but I mean they were gone for like 2 weeks, and that was like one of those things where they were trying to utilize like Hogan as an asset to the company, so they were trying to like do these world tours, but you know everywhere else where they would draw you know so many more people, it was kind of a fail of a tour. Because, you know, not everywhere sold out. It was, you know, all the arenas were half full. And it just kind of wasn't really a big deal.
Yeah, I'm looking at this this little note right here saying that Johnny B. Badd blew out his knee while doing promotional work in England. And he was replaced on the tour by Brian Pillman. How do you blow out your knee doing promotional work?
He was probably dancing or something. He's a Looney Tune.
That just stuck out to me. Blew out his knee doing promotional work. Okay.
Yeah, whatever. Whatever. It's just stupid. You know what? Honestly, like, what can you come up with? And they had, in 94, see, Hogan's the big star. But they had to pay him a percentage of pay-per-views. So Hogan wasn't on every pay-per-view for some reason. And I guess it was because the money thing. And so Flair suspended. And Flair has his own title. And he's suspended. And in order to get tickets moving for the Halloween Havoc show, they changed the main event is supposed to be a cage match between Flair and Hogan. But according to Ric Flair's book, they changed the match to a retirement match for Flair because ever since Flair came back, they've kind of been walking all over him, you know. And
I think that originally it was Hogan put his career on the line first to get Flair back, and then they changed it to a double retirement stipulation like a few weeks before Halloween Havoc.
It was – I just remember the Flair thing. Like, that's all – so that's actually – I do not remember that at all. I do remember the Flair aspect of it, but you're always right on these things, so I definitely believe you. So what
yeah,
happened?
Yeah, I'm looking at the stuff on Fall Brawl right here, and if you're reading this italics, it talks about, you know, they did a segment where with Hogan and Flair, and Hogan agreed to put his career on the line. So,
which isn't honest to God, why would Hogan put his career on the line? Just to get Ric Flair reinstated. That doesn't make any sense at all. Wouldn't he say, hey,
no
Flair, if you want your job back, you know, put your career on the line and then you'll be gone for good. But, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
That's Hogan WCW. All right, but one thing that I know we were kind of negative on some of these things involving, like, Hogan. But, I mean, the undercard was really good at this time. I mean, like, you obviously kept watching, and so did I. So, I mean, there was a reason we were still watching. But there's a part in this show, Fall Brawl 1994, that I know you are not going to be pleased at. So when we get there, I'll go ahead and let you take that one.
Okay.
All right. Johnny B. Badd wrestled Lord Steven Regal, and he won the title with a backslide. And this was a hell of a match. And it was, you know, probably 11 minutes. And it was really good. It was, like, I actually just watched Fall Brawl, I think it was on Friday, this Friday. But, yeah, it was a really good match, like, good back and forth. And Regal really knew how to make Johnny B. Badd look better than he was. And,
yeah.
I mean, I always thought he was good at the time. Johnny B. Badd was definitely good, but Regal's made him better. And he had better matches with Regal than he did with almost anybody.
I like the finish of this match was really good. You know, Regal's hitting him with the European uppercuts, and he goes to hit another one, and he gets in the back claw and gets pinned. I thought that was a pretty good finish.
Yeah, it was. It was awesome. And this is the last show for Mick Foley. He wrestled Kevin Sullivan because Mick Foley turned on, I believe it was Dave Sullivan, and that Kevin Sullivan was supposed to be the baby face, and which – There's no one in the world. I mean, honestly, there's no one in the world that likes Kevin Sullivan. There's no one that would buy him as a babyface. I mean, there's no one. I mean, really, no one. I mean, it's just one of those things that they're just, you know, it's just he's just a heel, and that's just what you have to accept. So the world's worst babyface, Kevin Sullivan beat Cactus Jack in about 6 minutes. And then he left, and he was off to ECW. So
I remember Cactus took, like, a bump off the second rope on the outside to the floor on his hip, like he always used to do. Pretty brutal.
It is brutal. All right. And one of the that match Steamboat had with Steve Austin was actually one of his last matches. It might have been his last. I know it wasn't very long before Fall Brawl that he suffered, like, a career-ending back injury. And we didn't see him wrestle again until WrestleMania of, 2 years ago, was it? Or was last year? It was last year. We didn't see him again, you know, for that long. So,
yep.
So go ahead.
Okay. So Steamboat has this legit back injury, so, and he's supposed to face Steve Austin in a rematch. So he comes out, and he's not dressed to wrestle, and Nick Bockwinkel's there. And says, unfortunately, due to his injury, he's going to have to forfeit the title. And so Steamboat leaves, and Nick Bockwinkel says, but you're defending the title tonight, and you're going to defend against this man. And all, and then I hear Hacksaw Jim Duggan's music. Jesus Christ. And so Austin's flipping out because he didn't want to have to defend the title. And so he's still arguing when Hacksaw gets in the ring, and he turns around right into the flying clothesline. And what was the time on this?
It was really 27 seconds.
Yeah, it was maybe 27 seconds or something like that. At the 40-second mark. Now he hit him with a backdrop and a splash and pinned him at about the 40-second mark in the match. And Hacksaw Duggan defeated Steve Austin for the United States title.
In 40 seconds.
I don't understand.
See, the thing, all right, the one thing you could always count on in WCW was the U.S. title and the TV title, no matter what, and normally the world title before Hogan, they were all workhorse titles. I mean, they really were.
Yeah.
They were all, you know, great wrestlers having great matches over the title. I mean, like, if you think about the, you know, the year before this, with, you know, because Steve Austin got the title from Dustin Rhodes, who was feuding with, you know, Rick Rude, and, you know, Rick Rude was feuding with Sting, and there were always these great matches, you know, over this title. And, you know, before Hogan, it was, you know, Ric Flair, Baszler, Braun Strowman had matches. You know, everybody was having these good matches. There's just a wave of WWF scoops coming into WCW, and everybody was, you know, when Hogan came in there, it's like, well, you know, Hogan's going to bring people. Hogan's a star. There's not a single person that would have preferred Hacksaw Jim Duggan matches to Dustin Rhodes matches or Rick Rude matches or Steve Austin matches, of course.
Not WCW's audience.
The WCW audience didn't care. They didn't want that. And Jim Duggan is just like, Jim Duggan in the 80s was awesome, like, you know, in Mid-South. But he was awesome. But, I mean, he's past his prime at this point. And, you know, there's no one that could have cared. And it was just one of those things that, it was just something WCW did that was just really stupid.
And I mean, you know, later on after he got released, you know, like Bischoff would say, Well, we didn't really see any marketability in Steve Austin and didn't really see a star in Steve Austin. I said, if you couldn't see a star in Steve Austin in, like, 1994, then you don't have any business running a wrestling company.
No, of course not. Of course not.
People were seeing, could see he was going to be a star, like, when he started in USWA, you know, like in 1990. I mean, God.
You know how this was. Well,
I'd refuse to do the job.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, Steve Austin was a team player at the time.
Yeah, he was probably making a good amount of money. So
we move on to the tag title match. And they're really starting to push Mark Bagwell and the Patriot for some reason. The Patriot replaced, essentially, because fired for drugs of some sort. Like, you know, he failed some sort of drug test, and they fired him, and they just got rid of him. So they got the Patriot from Global, because Global had closed down by this point, I believe. It was right around this time. At least if they weren't closed down, they were definitely on their last legs. So the Patriot is in WCW and teaming up with Marcus Bagwell. And, I mean, they're over with the local fans, but, you know, no one really cares about them. And I always thought the Paul Orndorff and Paul Roma was kind of a stale period for the tag titles, because I know Paul Roma was, you know, horrible. I always thought he was, and I know you don't agree with me on that. And Paul Orndorff was great, but I never thought they were really over. Even while I watched this recently, and they were not over. It was not, you know, a big heel reaction. You know, you'd hear Paula, the occasional Paula or whatever, but it wasn't really like they were, you know, super over.
Yeah, just the whole division at this time was really stale. I mean.
Yeah, so, yeah, it was. It was definitely stale.
Yeah.
I just remember
in this match, Paul Orndorff dumping like a big ice chest on Bagwell. Like, pouring ice and drinks all over him in one of the spots on the outside. It's pretty cool.
All right, so, okay. Nick Bockwinkel comes out, and there's this thing where there's a, it's not necessarily come out. It was decided before this. No, he did come out. He did come out. Okay, sorry. Vader, the Guardian Angel, who had done dick since he'd been in WCW, he'd really done nothing, and Sting, they all came out, and they're going to have this triangle match. And you'd think, oh, it's a triangle match, so they're all going to wrestle each other. Not in 1994 WCW. What they did was they had a coin toss, and whoever, you know, won the coin toss or whatever received the bye. So Sting ends up receiving the bye in this match, and so the Guardian Angel wrestled Vader first. And Vader destroyed him. I mean, destroyed him in 7 minutes. And then Vader had a long and great match with Sting. And so he was declared the number one contender for the world title. But,
yeah,
of course, after the number one contender. But even though they did this, they were still bringing Flair in to do the match with Hogan because they had already kind of announced that. So it's really the number two contender because the number one contender is obviously Ric Flair.
So yeah, also, at the end of this match, it was a double countdown finish. You know, like, I think they did the 10 count on both guys, and then the ref is the first one to his feet and wins the match. And Sting's getting up, and all of a sudden, and the ref's distracted, and Sting's getting up, and then the match man hits Sting in the knee with the pipe. And Sting goes down. Vader gets up. Referee declares him the winner.
It was a different finish, and I actually was good. I was fine with it because it wasn't too goofy. You know, it was the masked guy came and attacked him. Vader was the first one to get up. I thought it was a good finish. It was original. I liked it.
Yeah, and they had established him as a friend of Hogan, so it made sense, you know, to kind of screw
yes.
him. So.
Yes. One really funny thing. Okay. They have this, the Fall Brawl main event. It's, the Nasty Boys are now babyfaces. Okay, they are full-fledged babyfaces, and they are teaming up with Dusty and Dustin Rhodes to go against Arn Anderson, Terry Funk, and Buckhouse Buck. And the fourth member of the team, instead of Ming, who's a wrestler, you know, in the fans' eyes, you know, it's Colonel Robert Parker, who's also a wrestler, but he hadn't been wrestling in probably a long time, you know. And...
Yeah.
But when Parker would actually put on his wrestling gear, it was always a sight to see because he always looked so cheesy. And it was, I'm sure it was just his normal gear, but, like, you know, he's such a big guy. He's so tall.
He looks just kind of like a lanky-looking geek.
Yes, yes. And it was always so funny. But this was actually also a hell of a match. It was a fun
yeah.
war game. Well, any time you have Terry Funk and Arn Anderson in a match, and Bunkhouse Buck could always carry his weight as well, and the Nasty Boys are always wild, and Dustin Rhodes is great. So, I mean, it was a really good match. It's way better than the Hogan main event.
Even Dusty, I mean, you know, he could just in there throwing elbows and stuff like that the whole time.
Yeah, Dusty could still go, you know, like, not, he couldn't be, like, world champion or anything, but he handled himself well to be in a you know, a match of that, like a multi-man match,
like Street,
you know?
Street Fight or something like that. Street Fight.
Yes.
Kind of match.
Yes. So after the show, Alex Wright starts appearing in WCW. And Alex Wright is this, they call him Das Wunderkind. And he just dances. He just dances on Saturday night wearing this leather jacket, and he does this, like, there's like a video of Vinny V doing the same dance. And it's just like this goofy, goofy dance. But I mean, he was like one of those, like, wrestlers that the girls would like. And it really was. He was. Like, he was really, like how Mark Bagwell was, like, in the early 90s, you know, like in, like, 91 and stuff. He kind of took over that at that point. And I don't know, I thought it was pretty interesting.
His dancing was very, very gay.
It was super gay. Super gay. Actually, there's a kind of a funny story. Tank, who wrestled on one of my shows, he's like a Midwest indie wrestler. Like, he kind of has wrestled, you know, he's like in Tennessee and Georgia and all, you know, Tank. And one time he was talking about Alex Wright having, like, the biggest dick in all of wrestling. Like, he said it was like a snake. And he was telling, like, just a bunch of us about that. And I thought that was the funniest thing. And then one day, like, you know, someone posted, like, this picture of Alex Wright on a message board. And lo and behold, that thing wrapped around his leg. So Alex Wright is known for wacky gay dancing and a hose-like, snake-like dick. So let's, while we're
Interestingly enough, Colonel Parker is also known for the same thing.
Yes, Colonel Parker is also known for the same thing. All right, Sniper, are you there?
Yo.
What's going on, man?
Nothing, gentlemen. I'm CM Punk in it tonight. That's straight edge. There's no gimmicks aboard the brain bus. So you're getting the unfiltered version. I just had to get done eating my fucking dinner time meal, and I was listening to you gentlemen talk about the stylings of one Dusty Rhodes and various other men from the past. I think what I had a couple questions I just want to follow up with the conversation from before. Number one, my first question is, how old are both of you guys to have lived through this era or watched this era? And two, also, Sinbad, for God's sakes, you know, you call Das Wunderkind, a.k.a. Alex Wright, a faggot, yet, you know, you're worshiping Cody Rhodes, and you're seeking out pictures of Alex Wright's cock on the Internet. I would just like to know how you think that he compared to Rhodes, Cody Rhodes, that is, and how old are you guys?
I'm 36.
And I am 27.
Not everybody at the same time.
Well, no, my whole thing... Go ahead.
I'm 36 years old.
Okay. And you're 27, Sinbad? Okay, well, I'm between you. I'm in the middle of you two guys, and no, not in the fucking homoerotic way, Sinbad. So get out, so put the baby lotion away. You know, this isn't going to be a spank fest. The thing is that, number one, the reason why I wanted to come on the program tonight is because I called into some other guy's program. Big D from the message board on his Twitter said something about some guy was on a live audio. I decided to call in and fuck with the dude a little bit. He was talking about the NFL. I hijacked his show. He got a little upset with me. And then Big D, being the guy that he is, pointed me to your guy's show tonight. So you can thank him for giving you guys the fucking rub towards me, and not in a gay way, by the way, Sinbad. And number two, what I wanted to say was, no, I am not a professional wrestler. I'm tired of people asking me if I'm a fucking professional wrestler. I have never been a pro wrestler. I never will be one. And anybody that's got any sense in their fucking brain, anybody that's got one iota lick of sense, would not want to be a professional wrestler. Because why? Because why the fuck would you want to damage your own body for the amusement of other people? Unless There's something mentally wrong with you. And yes, I do have friends that are in a professional wrestling business. I love them dearly, one of which is like a brother to me. And I will say this, every time I talk to him, and he'll ask you, every time, he'll tell you, every time I talk to him, I ask him why the fuck he does what he does. And you know what his answer is? He says, I can't believe that people pay to watch me fake fight. It's amazing. And I have to agree with that. I have to agree with that. I got to give a shout out to Evan Bourne. The dude swung me some free tickets to the St. Louis Super Show over the weekend. God bless you, sir. You are on top of your game. Much like a lot of the ROH talents that go to the WWF, they are on top of their game. No, it's not a Cody Rhodes. No, he doesn't have a third year, third fucking generation bloodline. No, he doesn't. But you know what? He makes Cody Rhodes look like he's a joke, while Matt Sydal, a.k.a. Evan Bourne, who comes from little old St. Louis doing nothing, working in garages, to now on the big time. That's what I like to see. That's why I like professional wrestling. I don't like professional wrestling for guys like Matt Hardy, who are all about their own cock, even though he's a fat fuck who's a drug addict, who now wants to blame the PG movement for him sucking dick. No, brother, you just fell off after Edge made you look like a bitch, took your fucking woman, and then you leave, and then they come bring you back, and you still look like a bitch. You know what I'm saying? That's why I have heat with fucking Matt Hardy. Tommy Dreamer can suck a dick. He's a fucking hypocrite. And you know what? Anytime that guy wants to holler at me on Twitter, hey, you know how to dial me up, because I've got about 10 emails from you, and I'm a fan. I'm a nobody. You know what I'm saying? I'm a nobody, but yet these big-time superstars, in quotes, want to fucking holler at me? Get real. You know what I'm saying?
Hang on. No. I
want to
know names. Who sent you emails?
Oh, don't. Hey, I don't want to. Hey, straight up, I don't want to go there, but that's one thing I was going to say, is mad love to all of the quote-unquote superstars that are sending me Twitter messages saying that you love reading my shit. So much for a PG movement when I have become, and I have it on good authority, gentlemen, that people in the WWE, they know about the sniper. They know that I say shit that is some of the most foul, some of the most dirty, some of the most filthy, wretched shit. I'm the worst thing that happened to the fucking internet ever. And they know it. And I know that there's a lot of sick individuals in the WWE that's supposed to be PG that just love reading my shit. Why? I had a top guy tell me that he read one of my tweets and he laughed for 10 minutes. He told me I should be doing Broadway. I'm so good.
See,
and there's a top... And then you would be surprised if I told you some of the people, man, I can't do it because honestly, that would make me a mark because I'm name-dropping cats, but the fact is I had to name-drop Evan Bourne because he went out on a limb and gave me free fucking tickets, which tells you something about that guy. You know what I'm saying? He's reading my Twitter. These guys are reading it, gentlemen. What I would suggest to both of you is get a Twitter and start communicating with these people, because you would be surprised at how insecure some of these superstars really are about themselves. You'd be surprised.
How come Cody doesn't have a Twitter?
Probably we know why, Sinbad, because everybody'd be asking him the same question we ask you. Are you a faggot?
Hey, man, just for the record, Sniper, you asked me that. I came on your show. And I told you that I was not.
I will admit that you had the sack. You had the satchel to cut the fat satchel balls to come on my show, the War Zone Radio with Julio, who was one of the greatest people in radio. God bless him. He went to Future Endeavors. We wish you the best.
Thank you.
But I promise you this, Sinbad, I do give you the props that you came on the program to talk about whether or not you were a faggot, which I know that's difficult for you to talk about because you're not a faggot, but you have the gimmick of a guy where he's not a faggot, but everybody else thinks he is one. So even though I pulled the curtain back a little bit, what I want to say is that since then, you've really turned up the heat, and between you and Jakey, I don't know which is the bigger faggot. But I promise you, it's probably Jakey just because he's really a faggot. And I mean, no disrespect to your boyfriend, Jakey. I know he's a down-low sniper fan, even though he's a homosexual. But the fact is, though, baby, is I'm all man. And I love to fuck pussy. I love women. That's my kryptonite, Sinbad and Cuts Rare. My kryptonite is a beautiful set of titties and a juicy vagina to stick my cock in. And when I'm telling Madison Rain that I'd rip her fucking extensions out of her head when I'm beating that pussy up, I swear to God, on Almighty Christ and Savior, that's what I would do. I would blow her fucking head off with my cock like it was a sniper rifle. You get me? I'm no faggot, okay? I love the pussy. So whenever I see a guy that sucks cock, it disappoints me. Because haven't you seen the pictures of Jakey surrounded by all of this co-ed pussy that he could be sticking his cock in? But the reason why they're there is because they know he's not going to stick his cock in them? What a shame. What a fucking shame. Some guys are the most manly of men, and they can't even get a date. So here's my recommendation is if you, Sinbad, honestly, you figured out the formula before anybody else. You're married and have a child, right? You don't talk about that over the radio. Jerk me off. Anyway, the fact is, though, is that you figured out that if you act like a homo, you will get pussy. Now, does that mean that the sniper has to act like a homo to get pussy? No, I'll tell you why. The sniper method is very easy to understand. Women are stupid creatures. So when you speak to them, you have to speak to them very directly. And any of you want to try this method, let me know how it works for you. It has at least an 85% effectiveness rate. What you do is you go up to a pretty girl that you're attracted to. You look at her dead in the eyes. Seriously, not like a stalker, but say it seriously. Excuse me, miss, I don't mean to offend you, but. And when you stop at the but, you've got her. She's hanging on because she thinks that you're going to insult her. And you come back with, you're so damn sexy, I would fuck the shit out of you. And if you say that as seriously as I just said it, you will fuck the shit out of that bitch. That night. Promise you that.
Sniper, everybody.
Don't be afraid to get graphically sexual with women. And what I mean by that is don't, you know, Sinbad, don't bring your wife, your girlfriend, some chocolates and cake and all that stupid shit. Blowing all your fucking money that you'd rather be blowing on watching oiled up guy in panties wrestle each other. But anyway, don't waste your money on a girl. Just go up to your woman and say, look, I fucked the shit out of you. And I promise you, by you having the balls and making that move, that she will probably be face down on your dick. Real talk. Try it. Katrina, I don't know what your sex life is like. I don't know, you know, I hope you're not a faggot. I really hope not. Pray God. Because, you know, I know you're from the South and they do frown on that down there, sir. But at the same time, I know there are a few of them. You know, AJ Styles, he's got a hell of a following. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Everybody needs to get, hey, in 2010, I know they always say, it's in 2010, in 2010. Well, sniper model for in 2010, we got to get it in. And what I mean by that is get your dick wet, get some pussy, stop acting like a jerk off on a message board, like you're better than everybody when you're not, when all of a sudden people are hating my guts. And in the next minute, they're the biggest fucking sniper fan because they figure out what the fuck I'm about. Well, you never got it, so you don't get it. I don't want you. I don't need you. I don't need anybody. The reason why I did that Twitter, real talk, gentlemen, is I have a very close friend of mine that follows it, and it gives him laughter on a daily basis. And he's far away. I can't kick it with the dude no more, hardly, once a year at that. And he's able to see what I'm thinking. And the things that I'm thinking, you might think it's a gimmick, this and that. That's all coming right off the top of the dome. Just like this interview, this little segment of your program, it's all coming right off the top of my head. If that's entertaining to a few, that entertains me. And I will also like to say this. I'm a huge, and Cutrare, you probably are too. Being from the South, I am a very huge fan of Jim Ross. And to have that guy acknowledge me, real talk, that's some real shit. Okay? Jim Ross is the man when it comes to doing what I wish I could do. And I wouldn't be a wrestler, but I swear to God I would do wrestling commentary if I ever got the shot. But the thing is, though, is that I know I'm not good enough to get into it, so I don't get into it. But I always idolized Jim Ross. I thought he was the greatest play-by-play guy there ever was. And for him to acknowledge me, that's some real shit. Also, shout out to Mauro Ranallo. That guy is, I've hollered at that cat on a number of occasions about getting into wrestling commentary. That's the UFC commentator for anybody that's fucking living under a rock. Or is he Strikeforce? Hell, I don't know. I don't follow MMA. I just know he's something on TV. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
This has been quite a segue from WCW.
Can we talk about Raw, man?
No, not this is not a present day show. We only talk about the stuff then. That's what people wanted to hear. There's a thousand other shows talking about Raw, man.
Okay, hey, well, let's talk about something from back in the day.
Did you watch WCW 94?
I watched WCW in 1994. Ask me a fucking question.
What do you think about Hogan coming in?
I thought that Hogan coming in to WCW was the greatest thing that ever happened to that company. And I'll tell you why. Because it put them on the map as far as another type of audience started to turn over and take a look at their program as being something legit. And it also paved the way for Eric Bischoff, who a lot of people hate on, but I have mad fucking respect for that dude. He has touched so much money in his life. He's touched more money in his life than a lot of us will ever have an opportunity to touch, and that is to be respected, even though he is a crazy motherfucker and made a lot of mistakes, granted. But it opened the door for him to create Nitro, and then do a lot of things that we loved as wrestling fans. Maybe I'll speak for myself. I loved as a wrestling fan. And I tell you what, the way that WCW changed in the 90s, I think, personally, is better than the way that WWF changed in the 90s from being from the cartoony to the attitude. And I know a lot of people love The Rock and Austin. I know a lot of people love that era, but honestly, during that era, I was more of a WCW fan. Why? Because they featured a lot of Oriental wrestlers. I enjoy wrestlers that have smaller eyes and bigger heads and do lots of moves with a Z on the end of it. I like seeing Chris Benoit and Eddie Guerrero and Dean Malenko and Chris Jericho and these guys when they were in their legit prime, not all gassed up, not all on antidepressants. And, well, I mean, maybe they were on some type of gimmicks, but the fact is, though, is that it got hyped up when they got into the WWF because they had to step their game up to meet Vince's standards. But that era of Cruiserweight was very entertaining. And you know what else? They had big star matches on top. That's what I loved about WCW. WCW gave you big star matches every week on top of the show. And WWE, still to this day, they try to do shit like that. But, man, you cannot recapture the way that the crowd used to react. You know what I mean? Like, for example, one example. I don't know what year it was. What year was it? Because, Fred, you're a wrestling encyclopedia guy. What year was it that Ric Flair cut the famous "Fire me, I'm already fired" promo?
September of 98.
I was going to say either 97 or 98. Okay, 1998, Ric Flair, Chris Benoit, Steve McMichael, you know, the Four Horsemen are standing in the ring all in tuxedos. Incredible visual right there. And they were in their home fucking base, and the crowd was just batshit. When have you in the last 5 years, 10 years, I'll give you, on WWE's programming, when have you seen a crowd that fucking bananas? WrestleMania. Okay, yeah, the biggest show of the year for Taker versus Michaels, they get nuts. Okay. That crowd. Go back in YouTube for all you youngsters that grew up in an era where you didn't get to see this. That's another thing. With you guys looking back on 1994, you know, with the way that Brian Alvarez, way he likes to say it, with 2010 eyes, looking back on that now, that you can't do that. You guys are really making a mistake, because now that if you look back on that era now, of course you ain't going to love it. Because why? Because it's all been ruined for you by the internet. And you know what? You could thank Dave Meltzer, who, by the way, I just want you to know, is a secret fan of mine, in case anybody did. Here's a scoop for Dead Sea Drop, a.k.a. the Shark Tank faggot. Hey, here's a scoop for you. Dave Meltzer's a Sniper fan. And I'm not going to tell you how I know that, but trust me. He is. He likes my work. He's a fan. And you know who else is a fan? One of my biggest targets, and that's Brian Alvarez. He's a fan. Promise you that. Promise you. Anyway, looking back on 1994, now you ain't going to like it. I went back the other day, and I watched Ric Flair vs. Ricky Steamboat on a Steamboat DVD. And I looked at it, and I said, you know what? Ring of Honor does better shit than this.
Oh,
and you know
what?
You might laugh at me, but I swear to Almighty God, I put it the other day, I just watched a three-way dance between Samoa Joe, Bryan Danielson, and Kenta. That right there blew fucking Flair and Steamboat out the water. Why? Because I'm looking back. I don't know. They're all the same. They did the same match.
All the same.
Oh, the fuck they aren't. Hey, anyway, here's the deal. We look back on that and we revere that shit. Why? Because at the time, that was Kenta and Bryan Danielson and Samoa Joe. That was, you know, the big two guys with the top talent going at it. Right? Just like now, would everybody want to see Bryan Danielson versus Shawn Michaels? You're damn right they would. Anybody with half a brain would want to see that match. However, if you look back on that in 20 years, whatever, you don't give a fuck. You don't give a fuck about it. I mean, do you guys think that Luthez had some great matches? Of course he did. You want to watch him? Fuck no, you don't. You don't give a shit. Know what I mean?
I like the old stuff. I could give two shits about Ring of Honor and their fucking flippy faggots.
I love the old shit, but I mean, if you guys are talking about analyzing it, going back and looking at it and picking it apart like you are, whatnot, but looking at it from the view of a quote-unquote insider, it's not going to make, you know, you're talking about, well, this doesn't make sense and that doesn't make sense. Well, that's because you're looking at it from a different view than you looked at it as a kid.
Well, we hated what we were talking about, like, back then in 94. The stuff we've been bitching about, we hated back then.
Really? You know, that's funny. See, I guess that's the difference between me and you guys. When I was a young guy, when I was, you know, younger, when I saw something that was the shits, I really didn't think it was the shits like nowadays, I look for things that are like, oh, my God, that's the shits. Well, no, really it's not the shits to a casual fan. To a casual fan, they don't know when a guy's calling a move or when they blow a spot or any of that stupid shit that we know now. Now that you know all of this shit, you look back on it and you totally have a different viewpoint. When I was 14 years old, I didn't fucking give a shit if a guy blew a fucking spot, and I sure as fuck didn't know nothing about a You Fucked Up chant until ECW started doing it.
Okay. Well, first, we have to wrap this up in like a minute because we still have the rest of the year to do. We have to finish the show, but real fast, we don't talk about that. We never talk about blown spots and stuff. We don't care about that shit. I'm talking about Jim Duggan beating Steve Austin in 40 seconds. That was fucked up. It shouldn't have happened. No one cares
awesome.
About Jim Duggan.
It was. That was awesome. That was complete. Who is not going to say? I mean, Hacksaw over Stone Cold in 60 seconds. Great. Fabulous. I'll tell you because. Go ahead.
We really gotta go because we only have 15 minutes. We gotta finish the rest of the year.
Thank you guys for giving me time on your program. I've enjoyed listening to it. I will listen to the rest of it off the air. God bless you all, and please follow me on Twitter. It's www.twitter.com/DC_sniper. You can find me on there, probably calling someone a faggot. Or I'd like to mention my most underrated tweets are about Jim the Anvil Neidhart. I keep telling everybody this. I've talked to Natty Neidhart about her father crawling in my window trying to get drugs off of me. I do not have pills. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, man. Okay, so Hacksaw Jim Duggan beat Steve Austin for the title, and also would beat him in long rematches that sucked. So we are going towards Halloween Havoc, and Halloween Havoc is a pay-per-view that was built up really well. They really went all out to try building this pay-per-view up as a big event, even though it was the third match between Ric Flair and Hogan. And they did that with that retirement stipulation. They were going for the same thing they went with about 10 months before with the whole Ric Flair retirement. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was just one of those things that, you know, I don't know. It was like it was played off pretty well. And another thing, on a worldwide taping, they introduced Harlem Heat with a new manager, and the new manager ended up being a guy named Johnny Attitude, and they actually cut it and actually didn't introduce him as the manager anymore. So they never showed it on TV, which was kind of funny.
Now, I think it's probably because they came up with the Sherry idea.
Yes. They had to because Sherry wasn't going to have anything to do because, you know, obviously Hogan wasn't going to retire. All right. Dave Sullivan is getting this kind of a push on the undercard. I think we should mention that. He is in main event matches. It's like Ric Flair and you know, they're horrible matches, of course. But there are these matches, and Dave Sullivan would win by DQ. So, like, they would still push him a bit as the Hogan number one fan because he was associated with Hogan. So anybody associated with Hogan, you know, they would, of course, push. And another thing that should be that should be talked about is before the show, there's an interview with Hogan, Jimmy Hart, and Brutus Beefcake. And they're all, you know, they're all together, of course, and Brutus Beefcake is like, you know, saying like, good luck, Hawk, you know, like, and they acted like it was like this big, you know, this really big thing, you know, this match coming up, and you know, you'll learn a little bit more after we go into this. And Honky Tonk Man debuted. Of course, Hogan's bringing in his band of old WWF guys, and he doesn't even have a contract, and so he's just there, and he wrestles Johnny B. Badd at the Halloween Havoc, and it's just a time limit draw. And it's so funny because, like, it was always so weird having a babyface TV champion, didn't you think?
Yeah, because
the thing about the TV title is it was, like, defended every week. And, I mean, you had great guys like Austin and Arn Anderson, Tully Blanchard, you know, guys like that. They would just, like, get by just by the skin of their teeth, and that was kind of the deal with that.
Yeah, well, Johnny B. Badd, like, kind of escaped. Well, actually, the thing was, Honky Tonk Man wasn't going to put him over. So what they ended up doing was Johnny B. Badd supposedly had him beat, but then the time limit ran out. So
yeah.
It's like Honky Tonk Man escaped and didn't even win the title. You know, it's kind of stupid. But,
yeah.
And previous to the show, Mark Bagwell and the Patriot won the tag titles from Paul Orndorff and Paul Roma. And as you know, with Mark Bagwell in any of his matches, he would only hold the title for, like, you know, 2 weeks at most. And so, of course, you know, they lost the titles back, which it was a throwaway match. No one cares. No, that, like Couture said, that division got really bad really quickly. It was, you know, just kind of a
it felt like they were giving titles to underneath guys, what it felt like.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly what it was. It didn't feel like the big guy. You know, because before you had, like, all these main eventers teaming up, you know, and they tried going for the tag titles. You know, like, a year before, think about it, Davey Boy Smith and Sting teamed up and tried to go for the tag titles. Now it's just like the jobbers, you know, teaming up. I don't know. It was kind of, you know, kind of not very good.
WWF was kind of the same way around this time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think it's still this way. With the exception of right now, because Cody Rhodes is the tag champ. So they're elevating it a bit, I think. Dave Sullivan defeats Kevin Sullivan, and they've been doing this feud for a while, you know, where Kevin Sullivan's pissed off at him because Dave Sullivan is a big Hogan fan, and, like, to be honest, like, Dave Sullivan was Eugene way before Eugene was Eugene, and
yeah
I mean, really, it's like, it's just thinking back at it, it's insane. And so he gets mad at him. So they have a shitty match. I mean, like, can you even describe how bad this match was?
No, because I blocked it out of my mind.
It just was not good.
Yeah.
And last week, I apologize if I'm cutting out or, you know, am I cutting out a lot?
No, a little bit earlier in the show, when we kind of got started, you were cutting out a little bit, but you haven't been now.
All right, awesome. I'm just making sure, because someone had complained about that, and I don't have a house phone. I only use my cell phone. So they had a match between Dustin Rhodes and Arn Anderson, and Dustin Rhodes just beat him. And afterwards, you know, he got attacked by Arn Anderson again. So, you know, this feud wasn't over yet.
Where was this at?
I'm sorry?
I said, did this take place? Is this on the pay-per-view?
Yes, Halloween Havoc.
Okay.
Yes,
this is a great match, too. Probably the best match on the show.
It was the best match on the show. Jim Duggan beat Steve Austin by DQ because he threw him over the top rope. just stupid.
Why would
stupid
you, challenger, why would you throw somebody off over the top rope?
Because it's stupid. And
yeah, I was kind of actually expecting him to get the belt back here because, I just figured Hacksaw saw Duggan and they were, and he would be getting the belt back, but no, they didn't.
No. No, he did not. And Vader is the number one contender. So, for reasons unknown to me, he wrestled the Guardian Angel. And it seemed like this feud went on for every show for like 5 months. I mean, maybe even longer.
It started it started in February, remember, at Super Brawl.
Yes, so we're in October, and it's still going on.
They were just doing nothing with Vader at this time.
Nothing at all.
We mentioned his name much tonight.
Vader was just, he's a nothing, you know? He was great. We loved him, of course. But, they were doing... Sting and Vader, I always felt, were the two biggest casualties during the Hogan era for the first year or year and a half.
Yeah.
Really felt it when Hogan was there. The Nasty Boys beat Terry Funk and Bunkhouse Buck, which... This match wasn't as good as you think it would be.
I just remember the finish was tremendous, with Terry Funk being power driven into the pumpkin.
Yes, yes. And, all right, so we're having this cage match between Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair. And... Ric Flair, of course, loses the match. And there's tons of shenanigans. Mr. T, is he the referee?
Yeah, Mr. T is the referee.
Which is completely unfair. I can't believe anybody would even think that would be fair. Ric Flair was
I think Sherry worked harder than anybody in this match.
Yes, and Sherry was, she was trying to, get the fact over that anytime Ric Flair was in trouble or something like that, and you're right, she did. I mean, describe it the best way you possibly can.
I can't remember. I think maybe she came off the top of the cage in this match. She climbed
the top of
the cage and dove off, and I remember Hogan giving her, like, an atomic drop or something like that. But she would always bump, like, in these type of matches, like, with a guy like Hogan involved. He was just tremendous.
And so Hogan wins the match, Flair's gone, and he's celebrating. And, yes, he's finally broken free of Ric Flair and all this stuff, and, he beat him, blah, blah, blah. Well, the Masked Man attacks him again, which only this time the Masked Man looks nothing like the Masked Man, body-wise. So they finally unmask the Masked Man, because he catches him, unmasks him. And it's Brutus Beefcake. And at this point, he was known as Brother Brutai. And so Brother Brutai is the guy, and like, it's so hard to think how, do you remember Tony Schiavone is like trying to like, oh my God, it's Brother Brutai! And like, there's no way you could get behind someone as a heel with the name of Brother Brutai. It's hard.
And in commentary, he didn't start saying, that's where the new name came from. He started saying, he just butchered that friendship. So then they started calling him the Butcher.
So then he was called the Butcher. And, like, literally, that's his only name. He's only known as the Butcher.
This made me want to vomit, to be honest with you.
The what?
This made me want to vomit, to be honest with you.
Yes, so...
Him just being involved in it, it's just, God, just made me so mad at the time.
And after, after all of these great years of WCW, we have these great years and these great things that have happened. I mean, really, like, these great main event feuds over the title. Like, you know, the year before, it's involving Vader. And think about this. Think about the build-up the last year. It's Ric Flair versus Vader. People are so into it. They're so into it. The storyline's so great. They built it. It's a great build. It's just awesome. You know, awesome.
Yeah, I mean, this is, it was just, I just, you know, this made me realize that WCW I enjoyed was gone.
Yes, and this main event of the Starrcade that we're about to talk about is, I mean, honest to God, it's the Butcher, Brutus Beefcake, versus Hogan. And in the morale in the locker room, and I've read about this so many times, that, like, it's, like, so low because this is what they have to look forward to. It's just this garbage. It's
horrible. We should mention back at the Halloween Havoc thing that, you know, Kevin Sullivan came out, and then Earthquake came out, and they had to rename him Avalanche, and they formed the Top Heel group with Beefcake, the Three Faces of Fear.
They were called the Three Faces of Fear, which eventually went, they thought that was such a good name, they eventually gave it to a tag team. But they were called the Three Faces of Fear, and Kevin Sullivan had wrestled a match against his retarded brother before this. So they have, you know, they have Hogan up against these three guys. And, like, he really has no assistance, you know, up against these guys because, like, he has the whole, his friends, like Jim Duggan and guy Dave Sullivan, and, you know, all that just stupid no one cares stuff as well. But at the same time, we have these matches, you know, or this big match of the Clash of the Champions coming up with Hogan, Sting, and Dave Sullivan. They're building it up on Saturday night and stuff against those three guys. And they're supposed to be the top heel group. These three guys, the Three Faces of Fear, are now the top heel group, and they are, you know, obviously being pushed to the top because they need to be against Hogan. And so we'll do the main event first because this just irritates the hell out of me.
Just think that we went from the Dangerous Alliance to the Three Faces of Fear to the top group.
Yes. I understand that. Well, God. Hogan, Sting, and Dave Sullivan, they beat the top heel group immediately. I mean, this is worse than the Evolution thing. Way worse. Because, you know, I understand the whole Evolution, or not Evolution, but Nexus. Like, I understand that Nexus, they're all rookies and stuff. But this was really supposed to be the main event program. I mean, this is it. This is what they're supposed to be, and we're supposed to be excited about. And
you tell me they couldn't pin Dave Sullivan in this match?
Yes, Dave Sullivan cannot be beaten by the three top heels, supposedly. And so then after, of course, you know, because you would think, I mean, honest to God, you would think in a tag team match, that means nothing. Hogan couldn't have lost to Brutus Beefcake in this match to build up that title match. You know what I mean? Like, it was so stupid.
Even if it's something as simple as, like his big move was a sleeper. Give him the sleeper outside, let him get counted out or something.
Yeah, or even hit him with a chair or brass knuckles. You know what I mean? Something like that. But, I mean, Hogan would not get beat by anybody. He just could not do it. And it's just, oh, I mean, it's sickening. It's just a sickening, oh. All right, well, in better news, well, not really better news, the undercard is also starting to take a bad turn because Mark Bagwell and the Patriots, who are a jobber team, defeated the Paul Orndorff and Paul Roma to win the tag titles, which was not a good match. Johnny B. Badd versus the Honky Tonk Man, which was also supposed to be this this TV title match that they have is supposed to be like a big TV title feud. And like we said before, this is the workhorse title. And it's Honky Tonk Man doing his goofy Honky Tonk Man shtick against Johnny B. Badd. So once again, the workhorse title is getting fucked over by the WWF crap. U.S. title. Well, before that, we had Vader versus Dustin Rhodes, which is the best match of the show. And it was for the essentially for the number one contender ship of the U.S. title. They didn't really say that, but Jim Duggan made the save after he attacked Dustin Rhodes. So then Jim Duggan's wrestling Steve Austin, and Vader just attacks Jim Duggan like right away. So then we have that main event of the Hogan, you know, dominating again. So I mean, literally every title, there's not a single title at this point that means jack shit. That gives you a match that you really want to see. There's nothing. I love Vader, but Vader versus Jim Duggan makes nobody excited. And Vader's supposed to be the number one contender. He won the number one contendership at Fall Brawl. What was that, 4 months ago? And instead of giving it to Vader, because Hogan doesn't want to work with Vader, he's afraid of him, you know, which... So instead of working with Vader, Hogan gives the title shot to fucking Brutus the Barber Beefcake. So we're going to... Is there anything really I'm missing right now?
No, I think you pretty much covered. I mean, there's nothing notable, like, in between the Clash and Starrcade to talk about.
Yeah, like we had said, after Hogan came in, it'd be a lot easier until we get to Nitro. Because there really will be.
This was some of the most boring-ass TV I've ever watched.
Yes, and what, like, we'll most likely be able to cover half the year next week. I mean, I'm being serious. Because, I mean, there's... It's so slow. All right, so we have Starrcade. And the opening match is Vader against Jim Duggan. And luckily, Vader wins the U.S. title. So this is a good thing for fans everywhere because Jim Duggan was a shitty champion. The match sucked.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
I always forget that Vader held the U.S. title.
Because he never really defended it. It wasn't really...
Yeah.
You know, because he went from this to the world title shots. And Alex Wright had a match with Triple H, who was Jean-Paul Levesque at the time. And Alex Wright was really starting to get a push as like a young babyface at the time. But, like, he was always going to be, like, a lower mid-carder, especially at this time. So it was, I don't know, I mean, it was a good match. And
I think Triple H left, like, pretty much right after this.
Right after that, yes.
Because I think Regal said, if Regal realized what was going on, he said, you know, if you really want to get somewhere in this business, you need to go to Vince. It ain't going to happen for you here.
Yeah, so he did. And Johnny B. Badd was supposed to wrestle Honky Tonk Man in their third match, which I think Honky Tonk was scheduled to lose.
Yeah, he was scheduled to lose.
So he just didn't do the match, and he left WCW. And so Johnny B. Badd wrestled Arn Anderson instead, which ended up being a good match, and it was way better than what would have been with Honky Tonk Man. So it was a good substitution. Yeah, so it was a good match. But the only thing that's bad about it is that Johnny B. Badd beat Arn Anderson, so that sucks. Then the next match, which I can't even believe I'm saying this, but I mean, this is what happened. Mr. T beat Kevin Sullivan in a match. And this is just one of those things where how could anybody possibly take, you know, this seriously at all? Mr. T, the 80s television star who's so irrelevant at this point, beating Kevin Sullivan, who's supposed to be part of this group.
It's 1994, and Mr. T is beating somebody on pay-per-view, on professional wrestling pay-per-view.
And another thing that pissed me off, and, like, this was not me as a kid. This is adult me watching this recently. the Nasty Boys, or not the Nasty Boys, but Sting wrestled the Avalanche, who's Earthquake, and he won by disqualification. So not only was Hogan winning everything, Sting couldn't even beat, you know, the person that just lost to Hogan recently. So Sting could not beat him. Like, so he's always getting buried by, like, you know, he became the Gorilla Monsoon. How Gorilla Monsoon was always the stepping stone to Bob Backlund, like in the 80s, Sting was always going to be like the almost like the stepping stone to the heels, going up to Hogan. Like it was almost that way with the Big Boss Man or Guardian Angel too. How they would always just, you know, it didn't matter if they lost because you know they were professionals and they would lose, but this just really bothers me. So that's one disqualification, you know. Then the next match is the Nasty Boys versus Harlem Heat, which is like, I believe it was their first pay-per-view of about a billion that they would eventually have. They beat the Harlem Heat by disqualification. So second disqualification in a row. Two shit finishes in a row on the biggest show of the year. Starrcade is their WrestleMania. That's what it's supposed to be. They call it the granddaddy of them all, and that's just what we have is that.
We should also mention that Harlem Heat were actually the tag team champions at this time, but they had not aired the match yet. So
yes.
They were not tag team champions on this show, which I don't know.
Yes, it's crazy. I mean, but Harlem Heat getting the tag titles was the best thing for the division at the time because it was awesome. You know, like they had a really good run. I liked the Harlem Heat a lot. And then,
although at the time they still it was you know it just still kind of felt like they were giving underneath guys the titles because they had not done much with them and they had done a lot of jobs so it just looked like losers were getting the championships.
Yeah, that's definitely.
And they changed their names back to Booker T and Stevie Ray when they went with Sherry.
Yes, because for a while they were just Cole and Kane. Which was just all right. And describe for us that main event.
Okay, well, real quick, we need to talk about Randy Savage made his debut at this time. On he came in at WCW Saturday Night and fresh off the WWF, he was an announcer. Vince didn't want to be a wrestler anymore, and he didn't want that. He still wanted to wrestle and saw that, you know, there was always bad feelings with Hogan and Savage. But when Savage saw he had a chance to make some money with Hogan, he always went for it. So
and
they built up this match as you know, Savage is going to either shake Hogan's hand or slap him in the face. And that's the whole story behind it.
Wasn't this at the Clash of the Champions, or was this at Starrcade?
This was at Starrcade.
Okay.
And he said he's either going to shake Hogan's hand or slap him in the face, and so they had this match, and it's a terrible, terrible wrestling match.
It's not good at all.
Not good at all. And so then Hogan gets the win, and then the three faces of fear come out and jump him. Do what?
Yes, I'm agreeing with you.
Okay. And so they attack Hogan, and then Savage comes out, and you know he's giving a thumbs up to the heels. And then he jumps them from behind and, you know, takes them out, and they have the big celebration. And then they go to the back, and they're doing the post-match interview with Hogan, and this is when Vader comes in and challenges him for the title to a match.
And this was – I remember seeing this because, like, I would order Starrcade because it was the big pay-per-view, you know. And I was really excited, actually, about – Vader challenging him because I liked Vader. And I was like thinking like, oh, you know, for some reason being a little kid, not like knowing the Hogan politics, I was like, oh, Vader's going to get him, you know, like it's going to be awesome, all this, you know. And next year we will find out the real truth. Or it'll actually be next week, but I mean in 95.
Yeah. One of the stupidest things I've ever seen we're going to talk about next week.
Which one? Which one is
Well, it involves the main event of the main event of the Clash of the Champions in January.
Oh yes, yes, involving an elbow drop.
Yes, and a no sold power bomb.
Yes, yes, both, yes, just horrible, horrible crap. All right, so everybody, next week we have this 95.
We're going off the air in a bad mood. I hate when that happens.
Yes. But I will tell you, once Nitro starts, it does get better. It really does
get better.
It gets better when Nitro starts.
Absolutely.
So, you know, the end of 95 actually becomes really good. It's really good. So, you know, hopefully we'll get it to next week. And while we have a little bit of time, because we do have a little bit of time, I think, probably a couple of minutes, actually, I'm going to tell you about my trip to Indianapolis yesterday, Couture. I went to Raw last night. There was a double taping. And at the second taping, I'm, like, posting the results on the board, you know, what's going on at these tapings. And I look up after a match, and I see tonight on the Cutting Edge is the general manager. And it shows a picture of the laptop. And I'm like, oh, God, this is going to be great. This is going to be the greatest thing. So finally it comes out, and I'm so excited, you know, because you know, a lot of the show's really bad, so you want something funny and exciting to happen. So I see them loading up the laptop in the ring, and I'm, like, shaking, like, because I'm so giddy, you know, like, I'm so excited about this. Like, this is going to be so great. So Edge starts interviewing this thing. I swear to God, it has a robot voice with microphones on top of the laptop, and it's just like, you are a jerk, Edge. And, like, it's like, you know, just like a goofy, like, you know, robot voice. And he's like, I tried being nice to you, but now you have a match right now. And Edge's like, no, I don't. Yes, you do. And Edge is walking away. And all of a sudden you hear the John Cena music. And, yes. They have
like,
a match.
Was it like Stephen Hawking was the general manager?
It was way goofier, like Short Circuit. All right. And so Edge wins the match, okay? He does. He wins the match. He hits him with a spear. John Cena's foot is under the rope, but the referee did not see it. So tough shit, John Cena. You lost, right? Wouldn't you think that's the end of the match? Because it's the referee's decision, final. Nope. Edge, you have to win fair and square. As the robot, you know. Edge gets
Yeah, like it's Edge's fault. Somebody put their foot under the rope and nobody saw it.
Yes. Yes. So Edge gets mad, gets caught in the STF, loses the match. Okay? He's lost. He's not the winner. So he's mad. He's so pissed off. So he knocks the general manager laptop over. Then he takes a chair and is just beating the shit out of it. I have no idea how this even worked out. Then he gave it an elbow drop on the floor. And then Edge gets up and he's like bleeding from his forehead. I have no idea what caused him to bleed. So it's just, oh, it's good television. That's what I have to say.
They should have, you know, they should have at least had the, you know, the speakers, and they should have still had, like, the general manager saying, ow, and stuff like that.
Oh, God, that would have been so much better. Well, it's next week, so they still have time to, like, you know.
And then every time he heard a voice coming from, every time he thought he was through, like, beating up the computer, he'd hear that voice again, and he'd go back and beat the computer up some more. That would have been awesome.
Oh, that would be so freaking funny. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that, see, I know it's good for WWF. They just, you know, they'll never, but I don't know. It was just funny. But, yeah, we will be back next week, everybody. We will be talking 1995 WCW. And it does get better. There's a lot of good stuff in 95. It's a lot better year than you know, 94 was. 94
yeah, we'll
was
probably
good.
Be able to get through most of it pretty quick next week.
Yes, yes, we will just, you know, run through the shows. It really was. It was a boring year for the most
yeah.
part. And, you know, it's, yeah, we'll run through it. But, you know, once we get to the stuff, everybody will enjoy the show. So, next week, don't forget to listen to us on superfriendsuniverse.com. We will have the chat link for you guys next week so we can all chat and, you know, we'll do all that too. So thanks, everybody, for listening, and we will see you next week.